This episode is proudly sponsored by Oxknit Designers. Now, Oxknit Designers manufacture school sweaters and uniforms. They dig ties and embroider logos and badges. They also do trainings in soft skills like machine knitting lessons, drafting and sewing school uniforms only, crocheting, jewelry making, beading bags, computerized embroidery, and so much more. Call them on if you ever need their services. Please call them on 0772 929584 or 0752929584.
This is the Craze Podcast. My name is Isaac with Issa in his reclined seat. Happy New Year. Thank you for listening to us. It's been quite a time since we last recorded.
5 months down the road.
It's not five, it's about four at most. The last time we recorded
four,
was
four
on
months.
4 months. Yeah.
Mathematics is not your brother.
All right.
So, for this episode here, we'd like to, first of all, appreciate all of you who have been listening to us, who have been reaching out to all our Facebook pages, Instagram.
And there's only one Facebook page, you know that, right?
For the Craze Podcast and my Facebook page. Or even
people reach out to you.
Why? Yes.
They don't.
All right.
Okay,
they
yeah,
do.
Listen,
because
Issa likes to put himself out as
anyway,
a famous.
Isaac, first keep quiet.
Okay.
And
all right.
For all of our new listeners, you can always share it or find us on Google Podcasts and Apple Pods,
mm-hmm.
Apple Podcasts. To be exact, Isaac, I hope you're
that's not cause, but I think what Issa is trying to say is that we are on all podcast listening platforms. We are also simply a Google search away, just Craze Podcast. Craze Podcast is KRAZE.
Yes, and the world has been very busy, like you've heard, and we could not wait to be part of this whole thing going on. Election period almost in
very many countries have been having elections around the world, and some of these countries, Niger has had its elections in December last year, the Central African Republic did the same, Singapore around June or July had its elections as well.
The US had its problematic elections too, I would like to say.
Problematic. I don't think the word would be problematic, because what would you say for Uganda, which also had its recently concluded general election?
But the observers said it was fair.
Which observers?
We had observers from the UN. No, not the UN. African what? It's called the AU, African Union.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
So they clearly stated that it was free and fair. So who are we to say it was problematic? Meanwhile,
however, we got in touch with an independent expert of our own, Dr. Livingstone Sewengana. I got to sit down with him an afternoon, and so that he gives us perspective on the recently concluded general elections.
Why is this interview very insightful and exclusive? He is a lawyer and an advocate of the High Court,
the executive director of Foundation for Human Rights Initiative,
and an independent UN expert, right?
Yes, and
so you know what information is going to delve into. It's what we call clean, authenticate, and
the best you can ever get.
The best you can ever get, I mean. So it goes without saying that welcome to the Craze Podcast.
And please.
Enjoy the interview.
Good afternoon, Mr. Dr. Livingstone Sewanyana. And welcome to the Craze Podcast. It is a pleasure to have you today. Today he's our expert on elections. He's going to give us his expert opinion on the recently concluded general elections, the parliamentary and presidential elections. And this happened to be the sixth round of general elections for Uganda. And they happened on the 14th of January, 2021. So Dr. Livingstone Sewanyana, thank you for coming to the CRIS podcast. It is a pleasure to have you.
You are welcome.
Yes, so maybe let's begin with a general overview. What is, what would be your general opinion on the just concluded elections?
The recent elections were the most violent and most problematic in the history of Uganda. And they speak volumes of politics that has gone wrong, characterized by intimidation, fraud, loss of lives, and to a large extent, threats to all independent players, the media, human rights defenders, political activists, and a threat to freedom of expression as such. They, to a large extent, speak of elections in Uganda as become increasingly a ritual, devoid of the what is expected of a free and fair election. A free, fair, and inclusive election, there are four ingredients that one has to look to and examine. One is the implementation of the electoral laws, the extent to which the electoral management body is able to implement the laws, electoral laws, in a fair and unbiased manner, but a more effective one. The second is the freedom of candidates to campaign. The third is access to resources and access to the media being the fourth. But when you examine all those, you find that a lot leaves to be desired. Generally, the Electoral Commission was overshadowed by the security agencies. You could actually get the impression that it's the security forces that were in charge of these elections, despite the pronouncements being made by the Electoral Commission. To a large extent, these were not followed. And even where there were semblance of engagement, it was always biased. If you talk about freedom to campaign, I think generally the opposition was not given the opportunity to reach out to the population, and the excuse was COVID-19. And apparently COVID-19 seems to be, you know, more applicable to the opposition than the NRM government. Talking about access to the media, journalists had a difficult time covering the process. Sometimes they were mistreated. Other times they couldn't even access the candidates. Access to resources, again, you can't even talk about it because there was generally very limited or restricted support to candidates, and a lot of money was used, making it difficult for someone who has no financial resources to compete. So it really did not meet the required standard. It was neither free nor fair nor inclusive.
Yes. So still now going further into access to media. A day before the elections in Uganda, there was an internet shutdown, and this internet shutdown affected the media in such a way that live broadcasts could not happen unless if they were within the studio of the media house. Internet could not be accessed, all other services that run on the internet or that depend on the internet being there were also shut down. So what would be your opinion? And the Electoral Commission came out to say that the shutdown of the internet did not affect them. However, they did not tell us then how the results were being transmitted to the National Tally Center. So what in your view is what does this speak to? Because the government's stand was that all the shutdown of the internet was to avoid any sort of instigation of violence that may happen on social media and so on. But then that's also cutting out the mainstream media, which are regulated. So you would expect that the government would expect them, or at least can regulate them to be able to not to instigate violence. So what would be your opinion in regard to the internet shutdown?
Uganda's constitution, Article 41, provides for access to information. And we even have a very elaborate law on access to information that was enacted in 2005. And also aware that we are in a digital age where sharing of information is critical. The internet shutdown was a big blot on our electoral process. Of course, it goes without saying that it was difficult to share information. The media would not ably access information and share it, neither was the electorate able to access and share information easily. So internet shutdown itself is indicative of one of the shortcomings of the elections. It amounts to abuse of freedom of expression provided for in Article 29. And largely also affects the outcome, because still a lot of questions remain unanswered. What sort of system the Electoral Commission get or use to access the results that they were showing? And why would you deny people access to these results? How were they being transmitted? Because we know that they rely a lot on internet. How are they being really transmitted? Of course, they give the excuse of security. But I would urge that one had to undergo some sort of balancing act, because what needed to prevail? The possibility that there could be violence, or the fact that people were entitled to access information. So it had an adverse effect on the results. It had a serious effect on the outcome. Internet shutdown has also a serious implication on public trust in the state. So in many ways, it speaks to some of those shortcomings that we noted. But apparently, this seems to be an emerging trend, because in 2016, there was a partial shutdown. But this time around, it was a total shutdown. And it seems to me that the state takes citizens so much for granted. And increasingly, this is contributing to public distrust of the state. And it definitely will have consequences on our governance.
You stated that the internet shutdown had effect on the results. Maybe for our listener, how does not having access to information affect the result of the election?
One, of course, we know that under the Constitution, Article 68, it is provided that candidates or their agents will be deployed at all polling stations. Now, it is expected that candidates will have access to the results as quickly as possible, and apparently have access to their agents, who would in turn make these results available to them. Now, with the internet shutdown, it was almost impossible for the candidates' agents to relay the results, and as such, it was also difficult to aggregate their scores, which means that there is no effective this encounter of the EC or the Electoral Commission results. Now, of course, as you know, some of the candidates have dismissed the outcome of the 2021 general elections as unacceptable. Now, the difficulty here is that one needs alternative results to be able to counter the results that were portrayed by the Electoral Commission. And so it is difficult to counter the results that were issued by the Electoral Commission. And that raises fundamental questions. Also, the Constitution makes provision under Article 104 for candidates, especially presidential candidates, to contest the results if they are aggrieved. Now, some of the claims have been that they were not able to access their candidates or their agents, and the results that they got are yet to be checked. So there is a fundamental and negative effect that is caused by the internet shutdown on the results and the public acceptability of those results.
So the media, let's now talk about specifically the media and its effect on elections. How can it affect, how does the media affect elections? Because one would think that the media mostly reaches the urban areas, which are the most densely populated areas, but for the biggest part, and I use the word biggest loosely, the biggest part of the population that is in the rural areas, they don't have that much access or to media. So what then is the role of the media? Is what, in your view, is the role of the media, and how can the media influence the elections negatively or positively?
Media plays a very important role in elections. As we all know, one of their most important functions is to inform the public. And in elections, they're supposed to keep the electorate informed of, you know, the electoral environment, but also the electoral process and the results thereof. Now, going back, one needs to make reference to the fact that with COVID-19, it was difficult for rallies to be held, and the right to assemble was largely restricted due to COVID-19, which left the media as the most important player, whether radio, TV, or social media, in particular social media, because social media seems to be very much appreciated, especially by the youth. Now, we had envisaged that with the restriction on public rallies or public meetings and public engagement, there would be more use of community radio. However, in this case, it didn't play such a prominent role as it would have been expected, because with community radio, you are able to reach the public a bit more, which was not the case here. However, I must say that social media, to a large extent, played a big role in conveying information about candidates, about events. As you recall, when Honorable Chabulani was arrested in Luka County, this information went through social media. Whenever opposition candidates, wherever, were being mistreated, this information came through. Whenever supporters of candidates were being unfairly arrested or imprisoned, information would come through social media. So media played a very important role. The traditional media also, they played a big role. However, they could have done more if they were not, if the conditions were not restrictive. Recall that the Media Council had restricted the number of journalists who could report on elections. Of course, this they challenged successfully, but that was a bit too little too late. So the media is an important actor in an election, and they very much influence public perception and the decisions people make based on the information they get. If the information is distorted, then of course decisions made may not augur well with public participation. But if decisions or information is conveyed properly, then decisions can be made in the interest of broadening the scope of participation in governance. So the media is an important ally, it's an actor, it's recognized also under the electoral laws. That's the very reason why the Constitution, the Supreme Court ruled that there should be equal access to the media, and that's why it's one of the major ingredients of a free, fair, and an inclusive process.
Right there on equal access to the media, what amounts to equal access to the media? If, for instance, if a media house decides that these are our rates, and that if a particular candidate can afford the rates of the media house throughout the election cycle, and then there's a particular candidate that cannot, what then happens to the idea or the principle that everyone should have equal access? Or is equal access to the effect that if you're reporting, report about them as well?
Equitable access to the media envisages that a fairly good degree of information will be received by the citizens. Now, in a liberalized environment like the one we have, we have public broadcasters and private broadcasters. Now, if you can afford the rates of private broadcasters, you are fairly at an advantage. Now, equitable access to the media does not envisage that all parties will actually have the resources and are able to afford media access. It envisages that the public broadcaster will ensure equal access to all parties, all candidates. So it is not in respect of private media. So where public media is concerned, then it must ensure that all those who express interest in utilizing their services have the opportunity to do so. While it also envisages that the rates could also be more affordable and more attractive in the case of private media. Now, the whole idea with private media is not about cost. It is about providing airtime, making sure that there is airtime for all. Now, where parties can afford it and they are encouraged to make it more competitive, then those parties should not be denied, because one of the problems in our elections has been that the opposition has always been denied the opportunity to use, to buy airspace, and even where they have bought airspace, they have sometimes been denied the opportunity to appear on radio, and then sometimes shut down, or in the middle of their broadcast, the program is shut down. So equitable access to the media envisages that public broadcasters will create ample time, ample airspace, and allow all parties involved, whether they are from government or opposition, to access their services, and that those private stations should also equally make available the airtime, make it more competitive, and ensure that there is no discrimination between the opposition and the government users.
Moving on swiftly to the elections themselves, the the problem of vote rigging. Could you probably tell us what, how bad is this problem? How serious is vote rigging? Maybe for our audience out there who may not know how serious or how bad vote rigging is and the effect it has on the results, and how equipped are our electoral laws in deterring vote rigging? And is there sufficient, in your opinion, sufficient political will for those in authority to deter vote rigging?
I think vote rigging has a very serious negative implication on free, fair, and inclusive elections. Now, you can envisage vote rigging in many forms. You can talk about vote rigging on election day, where there's ballot stuffing and pre-ticked ballot papers, and that's one form. But vote rigging can also take many other forms if you do a serious introspection. It is part, vote rigging can take in a sense, can manifest itself in how you count the votes. Vote rigging can manifest itself in how you declare the results. Vote rigging can also manifest itself in how you transmit the results. And vote rigging can also be can also manifest itself in the way you interpret the results. So it has so many manifestations, and as such, at every stage, it can actually be a very big blow to a free and fair election. So, for example, in our case here, we can look at ballot stuffing and pre-ticked ballots. They were identified in very many places. But perhaps what is most problematic is the result transmission, because there is a lot of manipulation of results during the transmission. And that is vote rigging, which is, I think, most adverse to an electoral process. Now, how you deal with that is a big issue, because even the Supreme Court in 2016 was concerned about how results are transmitted. For example, right now there are still some very fundamental questions about the results. Some of them have to do with, one, how were these results actually transmitted to the National Tally Center? Despite the fact the Electoral Commission says, oh yeah, we have our own system, but how were they actually transmitted? There are questions there. And of course, they raise questions of public trust. Then we are also concerned about the fact that results were not relayed from all the districts, so that people can know exactly what the scores were for each candidate. And that can raise questions. There's also another fundamental question about those allegedly who did not vote. Because out of the 18 million, apparently, those who voted were just about 10 million. 8 million did not vote. There are questions as to whether who these people are, why they didn't vote, and there could be all forms of allegations as to that vote. So,
and perhaps it could also begin from the voters register itself.
Exactly. So if you look at that, all those processes and the questions arising therefrom, they have a bearing on whether vote rigging took place or not and how it affected the result. So you can safely say it fundamentally affects the public will.
So do you think our laws are well equipped to deter some, if not all, the different forms of vote rigging that may occur during an election?
In 2016, following the presidential elections and the Supreme Court decision in Amama Mbabazi versus the Attorney General of Uganda and the Electoral Commission and Yoweri Museveni, there were concerns about about the transmission of results, but also the electoral process itself. One of the concerns was vote rigging. Now, there have been amendments made to the electoral laws. The challenge is that these amendments were made late, and they were not very well known to the public. And as such, the interpretation of these laws and the application to the actual election is yet to be felt, making it very difficult for one to get a sense of the extent to which they would actually address this shortcoming, these malpractices. But I think we have, to a large degree, a sufficient area of laws that would actually address these problems. The problem is the implementation, and who actually implements them, and whether they're implemented to the letter, whether there's a will to implement them, and whether the processes in place can allow their fair implementation. But as to whether we have the laws, I think we, to a large degree, we have laws that would sufficiently deter some of these malpractices.
Now, lastly, to our last segment, on election observers, the Electoral Commission this time round deterred very many election observers that had applied to Electoral Commission to be granted the position of election observers. So my question then is, what is the role of election observers? Can they, what is the role in having a, what role do they play in having a free and fair election?
Election observers can significantly and fundamentally influence the outcome of an election, because election observers can deter fraud. Election observers can strengthen the electoral system in the sense that citizens feel some degree of confidence given the external eye. And of course, observers have a role in checking the system to see whether it actually delivers as required, and also identifying gaps that need to be filled. Election observers have done this in previous elections rather sufficiently. You go back to 2016, election observers were deployed as far back as 9 months, the election, during the election, and after the election. The elections of 2021 have been very problematic in many ways. One of them is the deployment of election observers. Part of the problem lies in the limited time that was available to conduct an election. As you recall, due to COVID-19, there was a degree of uncertainty as to whether these elections would be held. And it seems like, despite the fact that the election roadmap had been launched much earlier by the Electoral Commission, the final stages of the electoral process took a very short time. As you know, I think they had about 2 months to conduct the exercise. Now, of course, you can see that the Electoral Commission then got overburdened, overwhelmed, because there were very many processes that they had to deal with. They had to contend with the COVID-19 pandemic. They had to contend with the fact that they had to trigger the process in a short time. And then on the issue of election observers, there was a lot of contestation between the state and some players. One of the challenges was the state did not feel sufficiently comfortable with this external eye called the external observer or observers. And it took a lot of time bickering. There was a lot of bickering over whether election observers allowed or not. And by the time I think that process, that bickering was over, that's very limited time. And even then there was some degree of satisfaction as to the number that they were able to to accredit. Accreditation also became an issue because apparently some of the missions wanted more observers to be accredited. But even then, it was a bit too little too late for effective election observation, such that overall, when you look at the deployment of election observers, it was largely unsatisfactory, more in terms of time and the role that they would play. Was not sufficiently brought out. So observers, by their very nature, require political will, because whatever the outcome of the observation, it is the state which essentially must respond. And there have been a lot of accusations from foreign observers, particularly the Commonwealth observers and the European observers, that the observations, the recommendations they have been making have not been followed up. And the state, I think, became very jittery about that. So they were not willing, to allow for effective election observation, to the extent that it's very difficult to assess the real impact of election observers on the 2021 elections, because the time was too little and the will seemed not to have been existent. And as such, the whole notion of election observation seemed not to have been very well appreciated in 2021.
Yes, thank you very much. So maybe finally, what would be your advice to maybe the key players in elections that may be listening to this podcast, and key players includes the voters and any other policy makers, on what then now is the way forward for Uganda in terms of elections, in terms of having a free and fair election, a democracy, and what can be the solution? Because then someone would think that the current government maybe is doing this, but what do we have a guarantee that the next government we may have will act differently? Because I mean, everyone would want to have things that favor them and not necessarily what the population or the citizenry wants. So what then seems to be the solution? Because we have the laws, we seem to have the systems, but the systems work when the political will is there. So
moving forward, we need to be mindful that we cannot separate an electoral process from the overall governance of the country. If there is a lack of respect for the dignity of the individual, the integrity of the individual, the independence of institutions, and of course the necessity for free and fair competition, then it becomes very difficult to have a free, fair, and inclusive election. I think we need to go back to our roots and address the whole question of governance. There are certainly fundamental issues that affect our governance and overall have an impact on elections. Among these is, of course, the whole question of presidential term limits. As long as presidential term limits were removed, we definitely have a big governance question. As long as presidential age limits were removed, we have a challenge of who stands for an election and who doesn't. As long as in this country we have a security apparatus that seems to dominate every aspect of our life under the guise of maintaining peace and security, then you cannot avoid the challenges and problems we face. So as long as the political question, I think let me make it clear, as long as the political question is not resolved, you cannot have free, fair, and inclusive elections, because the political question is a bigger issue. It is actually the elephant in the room. As long as you have not resolved the political question, it becomes difficult to guarantee free, fair, election, because apparently people going to an election with a lot of distrust. People are not free to enjoy their rights during election. The institutions that are charged with elections are overshadowed by those in power. And at the end of the day, the citizenry is at crossroads as to whether there's value addition. But all said and done, let's not dismiss the fact that at lower levels, our elections seem to be generating, good choices for people. Because apparently, if you talk about parliamentary elections or you talk about local government, people are able to make choices and they're respected. But the challenge still lies with the presidency. And that is what the political question is all about. So until that question is resolved, and it calls for magnanimity, magnanimity of those in power, magnanimity of the political players, magnanimity of the president, magnanimity. There must be magnanimity here. The feeling that one can say, yes, it's time up, and I can now do other things and leave it to other people. It is also that feeling that when people compete, it is basically now an issue of choices. It's not an issue. It's not a conflict. It's just an issue of choices.
It's not a war,
literally. And as such, it's all about giving people the freedom to make choices. And if they are going to make these choices, then they need an environment which is conducive for them to make those informed choices. Now, as long as that does not exist, it becomes difficult for us to guarantee free, fair, and inclusive elections. So at the end of the day, it's the political question. Once that is resolved, then you wouldn't have any other challenges.
Yes. Thank you very much, Dr. Livingstone Sewanyana, for your time and the very informed opinions you have shared with us. I'm sure our audience has been edified with the knowledge you've just shared with us. We hope that in the future we'll still be open to come and have a discussion with you on other topics that the CRES podcast may be interested in. And to our listeners, please thank you for listening in, and more details are after this. Thank you.
Well, that is all we had for you for this interview. Thank you for being good listeners. Very insightful and interesting. So,
Isaac, reach out to us on all our social media platforms. That's Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. That's the CRES podcast on all those. Or we are simply a Google search away. Remember, this podcast is available on all podcast listening platforms. Please reach out to us if you would like to have any particular person on the podcast. We'll be glad to host them.
Until then, do not forget to share.
I remain Isaac.